On Crick Info, this is Time Out with Harsha Bhogle.
Hello and welcome once again to Time Out with Harsha, our fortnightly cricket show. We're looking at cricket in the United States today and delighted that we're going to have Don Lockerbie, who's head of U.S. cricket, on our program to talk to us about all the trials, the tribulations, all the joys, the frustrations about taking cricket over there. I'm going to have Jamie Alter on the show as well. And Jamie is probably known to a lot of you as a byline on Crick Info. To me, he's still my friend Tom's little child, but we're going to talk about that as we go along. And then we'll get Harun Logart, who's, of course, head of the ICC, to talk about why is United States such a hot destination for cricket. And then, of course, we'll get the numbers game and we'll sign off. So the focus really is cricket in the United States today. Delighted then to have Don Lockerbie, who's the head of U.S. cricket, along with us on this program, along with Jamie, of course. Don, first international cricket up in the U.S. It was Sri Lanka and New Zealand, but was that the start of something big, you think?
Absolutely. We've been working on our Destination USA program since I took on the role of CEO of U.S. cricket in April 2009, and been very diligent about the entire concept of bringing the best players and best teams in the world to the United States so we can showcase cricket at the highest level and start to ignite what we think will be a big movement of cricket here.
Just curiosity, because we've seen the U.S. national team play in tournaments before. Do you look upon the U.S. as a playing destination or as a staging destination, that teams will come there and play, not as much as homegrown players trying to make it big on the world stage?
No, it's both. We have three major initiatives that we've been working on. And Destination USA is, first of all, the one that we think will help us tell a compelling story about U.S. cricket to the rest of the world. And with 15 million hungry cricket fans residing in the United States and perhaps another 5 million in Canada and maybe another 2-3 million in the West Indies, we're surrounded by nearly 20 million cricket fans. And we believe that that market wants to see the best players in the world play. Now, that's our Destination USA program. What we also have is a program we're calling Project 15. And Project 15 is an attempt to get the United States into the 2015 World Cup. And by doing that, we're going to have to certainly be in the top 15 better in the world. And that means we've got to win matches, we've got to improve, we've got to develop players, training camps, a national program. And that's a second initiative. The third initiative is what we're calling American Cricket. And that's an attempt to get our cricket into schools, to develop our youth program, to introduce the sport to very good athletes who might not have been growing up with cricket in their homes. And, with the sports of baseball and softball for the women here in the United States, with people being able to make college scholarships or trying to make pro in those sports, there's plenty who aren't going to make the professional and collegiate level. We believe that there's tens of thousands of very, very qualified athletes who could learn the game and would love to be a professional cricketer one day.
20 million is a lot of people. I guess a lot of them eat curries and have accents like mine.
Well, they do, but that there's no question that, you know, that's only, 7 or 8% of the population. We've got a lot more people we can introduce the game to, but we're certainly thrilled with the fact that over the last few decades, Commonwealth country residents have moved to the United States. They've brought their culture, they've brought their heritage, and one of those pieces of the pie would be their love for cricket. And they've certainly kept it growing in their families with their American-born children, those matriculated here for business or university. At the same time, we're finding that the growth of the game is creating a new wave of interest. We have over 1,000 cricket clubs in the United States. We have 30,000 active members of USA Cricket. We estimate there's 200,000 players recreationally on a given weekend in the United States. So it's growing, and right now we're more of an underground sport. We're working to get us to grassroots and then someday to mainstream.
You know, we mustn't let our friends in Australia and New Zealand hear those numbers, because when you say 20 million people following cricket, that's probably more than the two of them together can rustle up.
Well, you know, it's a large country, and that also makes it difficult, though, for us. I mean,
yes.
For a lot of the things that the ICC expects us to do for the sport, it means that we need much more in the way of resources. There's some countries who can visit all their cricket fields before noon in a day, and perhaps like India, it would take us several weeks. ago.
I know.
About a month.
Jamie studied in the U.S. and he was shaking his head a little bit because he knows what the pressures were trying to play cricket in the U.S. Jamie, there's three things that Don talked about. The third of those was actually getting it into schools. You see that as the biggest challenge?
I think that's a major challenge because the game there is still sort of seen as an elitist sport by the Americans. I'm speaking personally from my own experience when I was there in college and working there as well. And it's played largely by the expats. So the biggest challenge is how do you get it into the American schools and into that American demographic? And I think that's going to be a massive challenge.
Jamie, is it a bit like Netherlands where you have to scramble around for whatever space you get and play? Was it like that when you were playing at college?
I remember I read the book a few years ago, and this is exactly how it was for us. I mean, you basically have to wait till someone is done with their ultimate frisbee game or their lacrosse game or in somebody else's baseball lot. So again, space obviously is a problem because it's a game which is foreign to the Americans. So again, a big challenge would be to find grounds which are open to everybody to play.
Don, do you see the arrival of leagues in there as well? Sort of playing leagues, a bit like what football did in the '70s. We had the Pelés and the Cruyffs and all these people coming up. Do you see people coming in and playing for professional teams over there? Maybe.
No question. In fact, we're well underway in a planning situation where we're working towards professionalization of cricket in the United States to begin with. First of all, we're very, very diligent right now in working towards equalizing what some of the other associate nations like Ireland and Scotland and Holland and Canada have been able to do recently, beginning to put some of their players on professional retainer. Some of these players are now traveling and playing all over the world and getting IPL opportunities. We need to do that in the United States. And along with that will come a professional league. And, you know, I've spent a lot of years in American soccer, football, the history there very, very well, the strategies that have been employed. And that's why, actually, when you think about it, and you look at our Destination USA program and our Project 15 program, you know, they're not that original. When you look at what soccer has done at U.S. soccer, yes, the 1970s, the North America Soccer League with Pelé and Beckenbauer, et cetera, was a wonderful opportunity, but it died. Yeah. And what took place was the Soccer World Cup of 1994 to actually come and generate great interest in the sport, and then followed the Major League Soccer, which started in 1996, 2 years later. Well, we're looking to do that too. We'd love for the ICC to look at the United States in the future for some ICC events. We're looking to bring in the best teams in the world. And I'll give you another example. Even 14 years, after the Major League Soccer started in the United States, they're averaging 14, 17, 18,000 people to a match, which isn't too bad.
I think we should get more with cricket. I mean, all those Indians starved of cricket there.
Yeah, but my point is that that's what they average on a night, on a daily night in their league. But when Barcelona comes to play Manchester United in Philadelphia, they have 90,000. Why is that? When Mexico plays the United States, they can get 100,000 at the Rose Bowl. So the point is, soccer has a good history now of being positive, and certainly our U.S. team is at the World Cup starting in less than a month, less than 2 weeks, actually.
Yes.
So it's all moving in that right direction. And so by bringing in Destination USA events and what we think was a successful New Zealand-Sri Lanka series, to start that way, but then also work towards a professional league and professionalizing our players with a national coaching program, these are the kind of things that will work. I want to go right back, if I could, to one question, though, that you were asking, that was schools. And you know, one thing that people should, and I think readers and listeners would want to know, is that the city of New York, in their public school league, even going back to the book Netherlands, now has 28 schools playing varsity high school cricket with an over $1 million a year budget. And that's our success story in schools right now, that 28 schools have made it a varsity sport. And it's only 22, I think, a year ago.
It's good to hear, because I thought U.S. cricket lost out a great deal in the early days, because they couldn't figure out whether it was to be called the Cricket Association or the Cricket Board or the Cricket Federation, and they did what a lot of us do. They started fighting first. But Jamie, when you were there, do you have to explain to the Americans just what this game is? Why does the ball hit the ground? Why doesn't it curve in the air? Why don't they play with one mitt in their hands? Do you have to explain the game to them?
You know, honestly, Harsha, I probably spent more time trying to get guys the answers on the field, you know, when I wasn't batting or my team was batting, because they couldn't get it. I remember there were two guys who were playing varsity baseball, and I knew them. So I got them to come over for us and practice with us. They had the fielding down pat. They had all of us looking like fools in the fielding department. Yeah. Obviously, they couldn't get the bowling down at all. And the batting, I mean, as soon as you bowled them a full toss, the ball was like in the next state. But obviously, when you pitch on a length, they had problems there. I mean, I don't know how much that has changed since I was there 5 years ago.
Good question to ask, Don. Don, do you get puzzled looks when you see these guys in whites banging the ball down on the turf?
Well, I think the fact of the matter is it is a curiosity to a lot of people. And yet, when you have now over 500 cricket grounds in the United States, some of them may just be an artificial turf strip somewhere in a public park, but we've counted over 500, and that's, you know, on an average of 10 per state. Certainly a lot of states like New York or California or Florida will have a lot more than the average. So the fact is people are seeing the game played, and surely what we need to do is we need to make sure that the cricketers are doing what Jamie was doing, and that's inviting their American friends to come play and try it out and see if they can't learn the game. And not to worry about kind of the heritage fiefdoms that we have where groups basically close the door on anybody else. They just want to play with their friends and colleagues and families. And I think that's the secret. You know, what needs to happen is that this is going to become an American game and not just a kind of a cultural icon that people save or savor as part of the old country. And so my job is to really continue the exposure. And again, for me, the exposure is going to be to get it into schools, create youth academies, which are also happening and popping up all over the United States. We have a group out of the Atlanta area. It's already working reportedly with 10,000 kids in the Atlanta schools and teaching it as almost a public physical education curriculum. And then kids who are interested will go to the academy to see if they find the sport of more interest.
Yeah, Don, when you're talking about the last step, what format are you primarily talking about? Is it the 2020 format or...
Well, I think the fact is that, first of all, the ICC is going to put the United States in a position where we have to play every format. We play 2020, of course, and one day our team is currently in Bermuda. In fact, we play Bermuda today. We lost to Canada 2 days ago. We beat Argentina 3 days ago. So we're in the mix of what is called the ICC World Cricket League America's division. And so we play today. That's a one day. Now, if we move up into the top five or six of the associate world, we can qualify for the Intercontinental Cup. Well, that's 3 and 4 day cricket.
Yes.
So we as a program on the professional side need to be ready for everything.
It doesn't make sense asking people to play 4 day and 5 day cricket. I mean, you think that that the messiah, the missionary here would be the 20 over game.
Well, it is. I mean, that's the perfect storm for us. You know, right now, when everybody talks about what happened to American cricket 5-10 years ago, there was no T20 game.
Yeah.
We did not have a national stadium, which we now do in here in South Florida. We're better organized, and there's growing interest. You know, even in the last 5-6 years, the amount of immigrants moving to the United States who are cricket crazy, it's just doubled and tripled. And so we're ready to go with that perfect storm, the T20 game. But I'll also tell you something that I've been saying recently, and that is, you know, in the right city, with the right demographics, with the right two teams playing, I don't see why 4 or 5 day cricket is any different than Phil Mickelson teeing off on Thursday and winning a golf tournament
on Sunday night, Sunday evening.
You know, I mean, and sometimes he doesn't win till Monday. So, and you'll have 60,000 people walking that golf course. Now, if India plays almost anybody in a test match, say in New York, we'll have 40 or 50,000 people there.
So do you see the future being, say, an India-Australia or an India-South Africa, or do you see it Mumbai Indians versus Kolkata Knight Riders?
Oh, I'll take any of them. We're not picky teams.
We won't tell the ICC what you said, Don. Tell us the truth. Whether it be Mumbai Indians or Kolkata Knight Riders, because I can tell you that if you get all the Mumbai guys and get all the Kolkata supporters, you need to find a stadium big enough.
Yeah, I'll just say that we're open for business, and my phone is easy to find. It's my email's easy to find.
Okay, excellent, Don. Can I just one other question that would probably worry a few people from the subcontinent, and that to my mind could be a stumbling block to taking a lot of cricket from the subcontinent to the US, and that's the immigration laws and getting visas, and I think little things like that might just worry people, or is that not an issue?
We didn't have any trouble getting anybody from Sri Lanka into the United States to play last weekend.
That's brilliant.
Very easy. So, you know, I think the fact is, we're dealing with professional sports, professional athletes. The United States holds World Cups and Olympic Games and World Championships every year. And working properly with organizations like the U.S. Olympic Committee, which we're joining, and government representation that want to see entertainment through sport at the highest level enjoyed and played. I don't see any difficulty in getting the top teams in the world to the United States.
Who's competition for you, Don? Is competition other off-station places like Abu Dhabi, Dubai? Are those competition, or do you think you've got a more compelling package?
Well, I think there's one thing that nobody else seems to have, and that is our weather. We can play 24/7, 365 days in the United States in perfect weather. We just have to have the facilities. So the competition right now is infrastructure, not any other country.
So we don't have to worry about the snowstorms and the blizzards then,
which are completely
new to people like us, by the way, Don. I've never seen snow in my life, so I'm petrified of the snow.
Well, I don't think we'll play cricket anywhere it's snowing on that day. But I can tell you this. I mean, obviously here in South Florida, August, September is a little dodgy because there's an occasional hurricane that could come by. But that leaves 10 months of the year in South Florida. In California, we can play 12 months a year. In New York, we can play from May to October. So when you think about it, with the English summer being essentially the northern hemisphere country to play in, and only one, two, maybe three countries a year get to play in England, we're the next option.
And given that in England you hardly get more than 2 days a week, where the weather's good. Yeah, Jamie?
Yeah, Don, I just want to ask you, realistically, how long do you think it would be until you see more Americans, making it into the big leagues in the States?
Well, it's a process. That's why I said our third initiative is what we're calling American cricket. And, frankly, we're a country of immigrants, so it's hard to say, what's an American. If you're talking about someone whose family came on the Mayflower in the 1600s, that's probably going to be a while. But I'm the parents. I'm the son of an immigrants. I'm a Scottish American, and born in the United States, but come from a family of immigrants, and I'm very much seen as an American. So the key thing is that we don't really label. We just want people to come in, be part of our program, and yet, as I said, we have a shortcut that nobody else has. Our shortcut is college baseball, college football. If you want to know the statistics, I'll take a second to walk you through. On an average year in the United States, there are somewhere between 6,000 and 9,000 college baseball players who all have scholarships to go to university. They're in the gym every day. They're running every day. They're in batting cages every day. They play 50 or 60 baseball games in a year, and then they graduate. And only 5% of them are going to go on to become a professional baseball player.
Yes.
So that means at age 21, 22, we have kids who have been playing baseball since they were 10 years old at the highest level, essentially paid to go to college, trained to be very stellar athletes. They're 20 or 21 years old, and their baseball career is over. Now, that's a huge market for us to be tapping. And then there's kids younger who might not get that college scholarship, who are very good baseball players and could be excellent cricketers. If I can get that world to be generated, and of course women in softball, the same issue. We've got tens of thousands of girls going to college on a softball scholarship who are incredible athletes. And now that softball has been removed from the Olympic Games, there's really no professional future for them. We could have the greatest shortcut in the sport if orchestrated well, and that's our plan.
It's wonderful to see you so positive, Don. We've kept you for a long time. I promise you this is the last question I'm going to ask you. Between American football, between baseball, between basketball, winter sport, athletics, college basketball, is there any money left for our little game?
Well, our little game is the second most popular sport in the world, as I view it, behind football. And with a great interest from the rest of the world. In the United States, people want to do business in the United States. Certainly a lot of your listeners may do business and come to the United States often. I think that there's some worldwide economics and people who would love to see the sport flourish in the country, and those people want to approach us, we'd certainly give that a listen. But we believe that we're on our way to corporate sponsorship, to investment in U.S. cricket, to the development of facilities. I'll tell you that a city of Indianapolis right now is very serious. Their mayor is very serious about building a cricket stadium in what is called the sports capital of the United States. The Indianapolis 500 just took place the other day.
Yes.
With 500,000 fans at a sporting event. It's the world's largest one-day sporting event. They know how to put on events, and their attitude is that cricket, the second most popular sport in the world, why wouldn't there be a stadium in Indianapolis? This is the kind of help that we're getting throughout the country. The city of New York has said to us that one day they'd like to have a venue and they could see themselves being the capital of cricket in the United States. Well, if that's the case, they'd be the capital of cricket, let's just say, in the whole Western Hemisphere. This is a very big step, and I'm hoping to work with my board of directors and our investors and sponsors to make that happen in the next 3 to 5 years.
Wonderful to hear that, Don. You seem very bullish, which is a wonderful way to start. So who knows? Hopefully we might have big cricket in the U.S. and we'll all come down there and talk about cricket like we do in other parts of the world. Thank you so much for joining us, Don, and may it go really well for you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Quick Info Talk.
Well, that was interesting. Seems very committed. Seems to be a serious cricket lover. Doesn't seem to think that money is a problem. Seems to be very positive. Jamie, you share that? Share the high spirits?
Well, he's got a big, big challenge on his hands, Harsha. Again, I'm a bit of a skeptic, so I still think there's a long way to go in terms of if you want to get the first generation American involved, it's going to take a lot. It's still seen as a foreign sport. It's still seen as an elitist sport.
But what I think is even if you get the expats in, if you're talking of 20 million, remember, all of Australia is about 19 million. When they went from 17 to 18, it was an outcry. They thought they're getting too many people in good old Oz. So 19, 20 million is what they have there. Another 3.5-4 million in New Zealand. We're talking two countries which are the soul of world cricket. 25 million is the total population between them. So if you have 20 million cricket followers, you're sitting on something fairly big, at least as a viewing audience, if not as an active playing audience.
I think if you're going to have matches there, I mean, if you get India, Pakistan playing in New York and Chicago, you will have primarily sold-out audiences because the expats there are starved for cricket. I was one there myself, so I know what it is to go and, just be able to watch cricket.
So what did you do when you were starved for cricket? That'll be a story in itself.
There were no live matches back then, unfortunately. Streaming was just starting out. There was one site which started out. It was free. I remember we watched the 2000 series between India and Australia, the one in India, and... because it was such a big hit after that, the next series was pay-per-view. So we had to dig deep into our pockets and pay out big bucks as well.
So your dad, my friend Tom, dished out all the money for you to watch cricket?
No.
He did?
No, not at all. He was far away. There was about 15 of us all chipped in, and we got the dish for the 2003 World Cup, which was quite an experience, but we thoroughly enjoyed it.
Right, so Jamie, you did eventually get the dish. You did eventually get to see the 2003 World Cup, and you chose well, actually, because sometimes it could be very frustrating spending all that money and seeing an Indian team not make it to the semifinals. Or if you're following India in the World T20, they might not win a Super 8s game, but that's another story. Playing itself, did you get a lot of locals playing? Was it just guys like you, desperate for a game, coming together and playing like we did, playing the Gully Mohalla matches?
It was pretty much that. We tried to make it a varsity sport, but we had no luck because it involves too much red tape and funding. So we were a club sport. And there would be a lot of interest from guys sort of walking through, because we'd play on the weekends, so there wouldn't be any classes. So a lot of American guys, would come and watch, and a few of them tried their hand at playing. But it was still, used to wonder what's happening. And I remember one time the dean of our college happened to be there. And he said, what's happening here? So I said, this is cricket. He said, what are those three pegs out there? I said, no, they're not pegs. They're called wickets. So we had a good chat. And then after a while, he came to bat and he couldn't touch the ball. But through him, the word sort of spread on campus that there's a group of guys playing. So there was a lot of interest that way.
And hopefully that'll all change, though I suspect initially, in the medium term at least, we'll get Indians, Pakistanis, Sri Lankans, a lot of West Indians.
West Indians, Zimbabweans, expat Australians and Kiwis.
There couldn't be too many expat Aussies and Kiwis. There aren't that many Aussies and Kiwis to start off with.
There were a few in college,
Wonderful. So I guess things have changed. I think one of the biggest things in favor of moving cricket or getting more people interested in cricket, certainly from a viewing perspective, is indeed streaming video. And with more and more cricket being available, easy off the tube, with YouTube maybe becoming a big channel, with Cricket Info starting
to get
into the US a lot more. Excellent. We have Jamie Alter telling us, not just doing his little Cricket Info commentaries, but also telling us what it was like to play cricket in the United States. Thanks a lot, Jamie, for joining us. Right, and as usual, we've also got our numbers game question. So Rajesh has been up trying to figure out one for you. And that's a question that he'll answer towards the end of the program, as he does normally. And the question for all of you listening in on this program is, how many hundreds were scored during the India-Pakistan Sahara Cup games in Toronto? Beautiful city, I'm going to talk about that as well. But how many hundreds were scored in the India-Pakistan Sahara Cup matches in Toronto? And because Rajesh is not happy with just that much, who made them? So two parts of the question, how many hundreds, who made them? Rajesh will come and tell us later on in the program. And continuing on the theme of cricket in the United States on this program, we're delighted to have Harun Logar, the chief executive of the ICC, of course. How important is it to take cricket to the United States, given that we're already playing in so many countries? Is US a big thing for the ICC?
I think some time back, Harsha, there was a recognition that the US was a significant market and a big opportunity to spread the game. There's a lot of people who've got cricket heritage living out in the US. We know, as I said, it's a big market, and I think it was, or it is important that we play cricket in the US.
Do you look upon it as just another staging center, like we had the New Zealand-Sri Lanka games there? Do you see it as somewhere where you can get people to come and play cricket and beam it to the rest of the world, or actually get US citizens to come and play it?
No, in fact, very much the latter. And in the last couple of years in particular, we've been very conscious to get cricket being played into the schools. We were quite excited when we learned that the New York Police Department, in fact, were also playing cricket with people of Indian and Pakistani origin. So it's very much in our sights to make sure that the people within the states play cricket and not just simply a staging center.
Are you a little disappointed at the standard of cricket? Actually, the US, they've not qualified for 2011. They're struggling to put together a competitive team. Is that part of the mix at all?
I think, introducing cricket in any nation presupposes that ultimately they would be competitive. And it's fair to say that perhaps by now they should have been a lot more competitive than they presently are. But there is a little bit of a history to that. They had a little bit of challenge a few years back. They earned themselves the suspension for whatever reason.
Harun, you're being as polite as you always are, Harun. They're fighting among themselves.
No, that is true. And I think we've certainly come along to them now and said that they should be making a lot more progress. They've appointed a chief executive, if you recall, just about a year ago. And the signs are quite positive. So I'm optimistic.
Let me ask you what I asked Don Lockerbie as well. Is 2020 cricket going to be the missionary to take cricket to the United States?
There's no doubt about that, Arsha. I think for the people in the U.S. who are accustomed to fast and short time spans, introducing test or one-day cricket would simply be not possible to get them excited. And 2020 is a format that, without doubt in my mind, you would get people in the States excited with.
There's a peculiar challenge, though, that these other countries face, which is that the established nations sometimes talk down to them, don't really take them very seriously, talk about them being sort of second-rate county sides, as we're hearing these days. Is that a problem as well, that the globalization of the game is bringing the quality down?
I'm not so sure there's truth in that, because I think the established nations continue to compete against each other. If anything, I think some of our established nations should be picking up their level of performance. So it's less about the developing world and their competitiveness, and I think it's about our established nations being competitive amongst themselves.
Does the U.S. have an advantage over other associate nations? I mean, you've got Abu Dhabi as a staging center. You've got Dubai as a staging center. In the past, we've had a lot of cricket played in Canada as with the Sahara Cup. Does the U.S. have advantages in your eyes at all?
I think the size of the market is surely an advantage. The expats that follow the game so richly is an advantage. We can see that from the number of hits that we have on our website. There's a huge percentage that emanates out of the U.S., so they've got some particular advantages.
There's a point of view that says that with YouTube emerging, with Cricket Info taking cricket over there, with the streaming video coming in, you don't really need to take cricket to the U.S. because it's going there anyway.
No, I think the fact that we can get people to play and increase participation in the sport must surely count for something.
So we still need to explain to them the difference between baseball and cricket, you think?
I think they'll catch it very quickly on the 2020 format.
Yeah, so you're bullish about cricket in the US, and you're bullish about all globalization, are you, Harun?
I think developing any sport for that matter, and in particular there was a strategy some time back to develop the sport of cricket, is fundamental to future existence.
Thank you very much, Harun, and hopefully we'll meet one day when we're actually playing cricket in the US.
My pleasure, and I look forward to that.
Thanks, Harun. Thanks for joining
us. Thanks, Harun. Bye-bye. Cricket Info
Talk. Time then for our flashback section, and since we're talking about cricket on the North American continent, I thought I'd bring you some memories of the Sahara Cup in Canada. It was played at the Toronto Cricket Skating and Curling Club, a lovely little club with a smallish background. With a smallish boundary line. You had to be careful about hitting large boundaries because they went into somebody's house. And I remember a couple of times the cameraman had to sort of nip across and get it back from there. But you remember it for many reasons. You remember it for some off-the-field action with Inzamam, which was forgettable. But you also remember it for a lot of action on the field, which was excellent. Our first day there was in 1996, and we had some Canadian crew there as part of our television crew. And right till the end of the tournament, we tried telling them how cricket was different from baseball, and it never really worked out with them. They were very good at following the ball, which I guess they did as professional baseball cameramen. But eventually we got down to telling them, listen, this is baseball with the surface. In baseball, you do all that you want in the air. Here, the surface matters. And eventually they actually got down to doing it. But the crowds were almost completely Indian and Pakistani. There were lots of people coming in from New York. They'd drive down on a Friday evening, get in there early Saturday morning, pick up the Saturday-Sunday game. The games were always played Saturday-Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday-Sunday. So Wednesday used to be the slightly off-peak, if you want to put it in showbiz terms. But they'd come in on a Saturday morning, watch the game on Saturday, catch a bit of sleep, enjoy Toronto, which is one of the most beautiful cities in the world, watch the game on Sunday, drive back, reach New York Monday morning in time to go to work in the United States. So we got a lot of people coming in like that. Toronto's a beautiful city. It was always played around end August, early September. You could see the leaves changing color. The maple trees were fantastic. We had a great time doing the television from there. And we got a fair amount of serious cricket. I think Pakistan won 96, they won 98. India were dominant in 97 when Sourav Ganguly was at the peak of his powers. But it was a start of something very interesting. It was a start of a new experiment in world cricket where the venue didn't matter, the location didn't matter, as long as you had the right climate and you had the right television audience. So I think the Sahara Cup was a bit ahead of its time. The only problem was, of course, that it sometimes grew very cold, and Ryle Stewart, who was a cameraman from Barbados, and me, we had similar problems because we always felt it was very cold. And of course, Ryle would wait for the little gaps in between play to try and nip across to go to the loo. Sometimes it worked, sometimes he missed a ball or two, but it was an adventure. And we all enjoyed being in Toronto for the cricket there. Cricket Info
Talk.
Right, time as well now for our numbers game, which means we are going to get none other than Rajesh back. And we asked you the question a little while ago, how many hundreds were scored in the India-Pakistan Sahara Cup matches in Toronto? And since Rajesh is never happy asking one question at a time, he also said, who made them? So we got Rajesh, the man himself. Rajesh, come on, give us the answer.
Okay, the answer very quickly is that there were just 200 scored in the tournament and there were 15 matches. So it's quite unusual considering the rate at which hundreds are scored now. And the only two batsmen were Afridi and Azhar. So there was one each from the two teams. What was also very surprising was that there was only one score of more than 270 in 15 matches. So that's not something you'd expect now.
I know, that surprised me a little bit because that Toronto Cricket Skating and Curling Club, as we love to call it, was not the biggest boundary in the world either. How did the bowlers go?
Yeah, that's what the conditions were very different. And while there were only 200s, there were seven hauls of four or more wickets in an innings. And Saklane did it twice, and Kumble, Salim Malik, Mushtaq Ahmed, Ganguly and Akram did it once each. So there's a good mix of bowlers, fast, slow, not so fast, in-betweens, everything. So, and I was just checking that historically in ODIs, the ratio of hundreds to four wicket hauls is almost one. It's 0.83. But in this tournament, there were only 200s and seven 4-wicket hauls. So you can see that the bowlers definitely held sway. And the average run rate here was only about 4.57. So in a 50-over match, the average score was 229. So it was, but it made for good cricket because, the bat wasn't dominating all the time.
I know, I was there for each of those 4 years, and I'm looking at that bowling list with great interest because Saklane Mushtaq, then at the prime of his powers, Anil Kumble in the peak of his career, there was Malik, there was Mushtaq Ahmed, there was Akram, and then one name sort of stares at you and says, look at me, doesn't it? And that's Sourav Ganguly.
Exactly.
I still remember that day, 5 for 16 in that 97 series that India won?
It's, I know, it was amazing. And the pitch, I guess, had a little bit for everyone. And it was pretty testing for the batsmen. And I was just checking the batting stats. Even guys like Tendulkar and Inzamam averaged only about 35. And the star really was Afridi, who averaged 30, and he scored at a strike rate of 103. I was checking, he was the only one to score at a strike rate of more than 100 among the top batsmen.
Yes, and he wasn't only aggressive as a batsman. He was. If you ever shaken hands with him, I remember I had to do an interview with him in Toronto. He sort of came and shook my hand, and I said, no, you do that again, I won't ask you any questions, because he almost crushes your hands. But he has lots of memories, and very interesting to see that the bowlers dominated. Lots of memories coming back. I think Debashish Mohanty did well in the 1 year that he was there, along with Harvinder Singh. India had a new look sort of side then. Excellent, Rajesh. Thanks very much for joining us with those numbers. And then and you can go back to doing what you enjoy doing, digging up some more.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Asha. I hope your hand is okay now.
Yes. Thanks a lot. Quick Info Talk. So there you are. That's what we've got today on Time Out with Harsha. It was great fun talking to Don Lockerbie. I must confess that I quite enjoy his energy, because a lot of us have been talking for a lot of time about US being the big next frontier for cricket. So good to see the energy there. And hopefully cricket will thrive in the United States. And a lot of you who would have either read the transcript or listened into this program, tell us what you think about playing cricket in the United States, about watching cricket, where you get to see it. Or let's build a little community of cricket lovers in the United States. So thank you very much to Don Lockerbie. And of course, to Jamie Alter, who still dreams, I suspect, of going and playing a proper cricket match in the United States. And then Harun Lohra took time off from his schedule to join us too. And Rajesh came up with a question. So that's what we had today on Time Out. Do join us for yet another edition next time around. We'll have another topic that's going to keep all of us buzzing around.
This is Crick Info Talk.